Welcome to episode 18 of the Cyber Guy Podcast. I'm your host, retired FBI Supervisory Special Agent Darren Mott. And in this episode, we will talk all about the SolarWinds data breach with cybersecurity experts T.C. Johnson and Todd Hastings of the National Cybersecurity Operations Center. We'll discuss exactly what happened in the SolarWinds breach, at least as far as we understand it, what it means for you, what it means for your business, and who might have been behind it. But before we get to TC and Todd, I want to take a quick minute to talk about a couple of things that are in the news. In addition to the SolarWinds breach, which has been all of the news all week, simply because of the extent to that data breach, which resulted in multiple government agencies' emails being compromised and read by a likely foreign actor. The news reports are all saying Russia. Likely is Russia, could have been China, could have been a combination of both. It's hard to say. It will be months, if not years, before any report comes out as to the extent of this particular data breach. A couple things beyond that, Hewlett-Packard Enterprise had an intrusion this week against their server management system. It was such a bad intrusion, even worse so, I would say, than SolarWinds, in that there was an exploit discovered that is currently undefeatable, meaning that if you have HPE server management systems on your network, you need to disable them currently until a fix is made, but no current fix currently exists, at least as far at the time of this recording. Couple other things I want to talk about before I get to Todd and TC is one event that occurred to a family member's relative this week that I just wanted to highlight the importance of being aware of who you're talking to and how much information you're providing them. So this particular family member had their family member, this is an in-law family member, had their parent, elderly parent, needed to get some help from Amazon. And so she basically did a quick Google search of Amazon help phone numbers and somehow got a bad phone number in the sense that it went to a phone number that apparently was being operated by a criminal enterprise. Because they asked her a lot of information, she gave them information on her credit cards, her debit cards. They had her download apps onto her phone that allowed them to see text message and the things. A lot of bad things happened. So I make this point, or I give this example to make the point that, you know, if you have relatives that are of an older generation and aren't quite as up to date on cybersecurity education and threats and things like that, just kind of help them understand that there's particular threats out there. I understand that it won't always be the easiest thing, but at some point, perhaps you need to take an active approach into handling your elderly parents' online account information. So in this particular case, they got on top of it pretty quickly. There were some fraudulent charges to Amazon accounts. But a couple things. Obviously, if you're looking for support for an online retail entity like Amazon or Best Buy or Walmart, go to that web page and go to the support page and get the number directly from the website. Do not rely on Google or any other search engine for that matter to give you a number that's accurate. Bad guys have figured out how to use Google's algorithms to make their fraudulent numbers pop to the top of the list so that when you do a Google search, if Google isn't on top of this new fraudulent number for the day, it kind of pops its way up there and people dial in, think they're talking to Amazon or Walmart or Best Buy and give up too much information. So go to the actual retail site, online site, and look at the support numbers and get the number that way. That's the first thing. Second thing, one of the questions that was brought to me was, should they get LifeLock now that this has occurred? Certainly, there's nothing wrong with LifeLock. It provides a valuable service that kind of takes the thinking out of it for you as an individual as far as monitoring your credit accounts and things like that. And it's nothing wrong with LifeLock, but you can do most of it yourself. If you go to the three credit bureaus, you can put a freeze on your credit so that no new credit is made in your name. It'll give you alerts to potential fraudulent activity on your credit accounts. You can call your bank, tell them that you had this incident and ask them to be on the lookout for potential fraudulent activity. And one of the things that I mentioned with Scott Angenbaum a couple of weeks ago on a podcast about holiday shopping, make sure that when you buy stuff online, you use a credit card, not your debit card. Because with the credit card, then if you if you challenge a charge, it's between the credit card and the merchant, and you're kind of out of it, and you really won't lose any money. If it's your debit card, as soon as you use your debit card, the money's taking directly out. Now, there are certain financial folks in the world that'll tell you always use a debit card or always use cash. Dave Ramsey, obviously a big one. He's certainly helped a lot of people get out of debt, and so there's, you know, I'm not going to poo-poo his particular ideas. However, in this respect, this is where a debit card is problematic because the money comes directly out of your account immediately. And if it's a fraudulent charge, you have to work through the bank and maybe they'll get you your money back at some point. Maybe they won't. A credit card will give you that added protection that you can very easily challenge a charge and not have to be responsible for it. So again, just be aware of the scams out there. There are a lot of threats. Humans are the biggest vulnerability that we have with all of our accounts. And so you have to be careful as to what you're doing with those things and try to stay safe out there and help your, you know, help your parents if they're of a generation ahead of you that may not be quite as privy to all of the threats out there. And they may have forgotten, honestly, they may have just forgotten that that's a problem and they think they're doing the best that they can. And it ends up being something you have to clean up afterwards. So better safe than sorry. Pretend there's a bad guy around every corner, at the end of every phone call, at the end of every text message and email. So just be careful of that. Another thing that came up this week, someone reminded me of FedEx and UPS text message scams. And you'll see a lot of these where you'll get a message from FedEx or UPS saying that a shipment has gone missing or is delayed. Click on this link to reschedule it. And if you're at this time of the year and with COVID, we're all buying stuff online, you may not even remember that you purchased something online that's being shipped. And you may not have purchased anything online that's being shipped, but you don't remember it. And so you click the link and bad things can happen when you click links if you don't know where they come from. So just be aware that those particular threats are out there. Chances are most of you have seen one of these kind of things. So, you know, if you have a valid FedEx or UPS delivery coming, you may get a text message from them, but they're not going to ask you to click on anything to do anything. It's where they say, we've lost the shipment, click on this particular link to do something, and the link even looks odd. So just be aware that those threats are coming out there as well. So I want to welcome to the show TC Johnson and Todd Hastings. They are my subject matter experts. They are currently employed as cyber or computer analysts. I'll let them talk about their role at the National Cybersecurity Operations Center. Todd, TC, thanks for joining the show and taking the time out for me.
Yeah, absolutely. Good talking to you.
Thanks for having us.
Yep. So, and Todd, you are the second time attender. So Todd and I did a thing on White Hatters a while ago. This is TC's first time, and I thought I'd bring them both on to talk about the SolarWinds data breach because it's all in the news this week. And so you can't really, if you pay attention to cyber threats and cyber risk, you couldn't help but see the SolarWinds news come up, especially based on the targets that became victimized by it. So before we get into that, Todd, TC, why don't you just give a quick background overview of your background, what your education's in, what you did before you got to the NCSOC, and kind of what you do now?
Yeah, absolutely. So a little bit of my background prior to coming to the CSOC, I supported the Department of Defense as a red team operator and a red team lead doing enterprise red team assessments for government networks. Over here now working as a vulnerability assessment penetration testing lead that encompasses some red team activity as well. And then kind of dual hatted to support some infrastructure development so we can do more of a remote ops kind of capability. Quick background, my education started with a bachelor's of science in cybersecurity, and then earlier in 2020 graduated with a master's in cybersecurity from the University of Alabama in Huntsville. So that's a little bit of my background.
And I can mirror some of that. Todd and I came from the same red team before we moved over here to the National CSOC. Before that, I cut my teeth in cybersecurity working at a major bank in their internal pen testing team. And as far as education, I have a high school diploma and I've been working on a 4-year degree for about 12 years.
All right. So you're a professional student as well.
Yeah.
All right. So let's talk about the SolarWinds intrusion a little bit. Let's first talk about what SolarWinds is. It's an IT management service. I know that the organization we belong to uses it to an extent. We won't get into a whole lot of details as to what that does for what we do. But as you guys understand it, what is what is the SolarWinds product specific? Not you not to get into specifics if you don't know it, but just kind of the generalization of why do companies use it and why was, and we'll get into why compromising that system was important for these actors.
Yeah, so SolarWinds is a very large encompassing set of solutions for like remote IT management. So that can encompass hardware monitoring and even patch management, things like that. Network discovery, there's a lot of utility that it provides. It really eases administrators to allow for more of a centralized IT management platform.
Right, and it doesn't have to be remote either. It's almost like orchestration for IT management. It gives your IT people one pane of glass they can go into to be able to push out configs and change things and I think maybe push updates and stuff. And it really just gives them one area they can go to manage their entire infrastructure. So it's a convenience tool that allows you to do that.
And if I read correctly, they have about 300,000 clients, which certainly indicates that this particular service is needed, especially for larger companies like the Department of Commerce, the Department of Homeland Security, Boeing, and all those companies that used it. So as a red teamer yourself, how does getting into SolarWinds help you accomplish your goal of trying to get into the target you're looking for?
But SolarWinds, by its nature, so you have these orchestration tools out there for IT that live in their little areas. You have like Windows WSUS, and you have on Linux, you have like Foreman or Red Hat Satellite. But what SolarWinds gives you is it, from what I understand, talking to people who use it, is it gives you all of that plus, your network devices, and it's agnostic to what it's connecting to. So as an attacker, if you can compromise that system, that's one system you have to compromise in order to then compromise the rest of the infrastructure, as long as you have done so in a way that you have the proper credentials to be an admin on the SolarWinds box. Maybe not like a local admin in that system, but as if you log into SolarWinds and you are now one of the IT people. It really goes back to the concept of remote managed service providers in general, which is a big topic for this as well, is that if you can compromise the core of that, then you get everything that it connects to. And that's how this attack went about. The nation state people out there that got into the SolarWinds and was able to plant a Trojan, they were able to compromise the SolarWinds update service. And because those updates are being subscribed to by the users of SolarWind, they compromised SolarWind proper, and then that fed out to any SolarWinds Orion product that reached out to get updates, which then, of course, put them in that position, and then they could go on from there. I know one of the highlights that was put out, one of the successes in this, of course, breaching and getting that initial access and getting elevated permissions, that's all well and good. And for most red teamers, that's really kind of where you stop is you get all the way to, say domain admin, and then you wave your flag of victory and you hopefully write a really good report telling how you did it so that your client can remediate. But for a real attacker, in this case, they have another objective they need to get to after creating that access. And in this case, it seemed to be they were very interested in Outlook and OWA email servers. They wanted to be able to read people's emails, essentially. There was a think tank that they used this to get into, which famously they were able to use the SolarWinds stuff to get their initial access and get access. And then they were able to do some stuff post-exploitation to get around the DuoSec multi-factor authentication. So this attack had many layers to it in order to get to their real objective, which seems to be reading emails.
Right. So how do you think, if you had to guess or based on what you've read, how did they gain access to the SolarWinds update server?
That seems to be a targeted spear phishing campaign. Based on an SEC 8K filing from like the 14th for SolarWinds, they alluded to a compromise of their Office 365 environment, which maybe lead me to believe to start giving them the opportunity to pivot laterally, getting to other assets that might be able to target and have authorized credential access to the updating server for all the Orion products. Tell me if you've got any other.
There was another story that was connected to this that actually a researcher had alerted SolarWinds back last year, 2019. And I don't know the exact details, but it has something to do with the update service. There was a there was an account with a easily guessable password that granted you some level of access into their update system to be able to put your own files in there, it sounds like.
If I recall correctly, too, that was in a publicly accessible GitHub repository,
right?
If I remember correctly. So.
And there's nothing wrong. There's nothing wrong with saying, fellas, that the password that they had was SolarWinds123.
Yeah, that is the word on the street. Yes.
So. Yeah. And apparently, no multi-factor authentication attached to it either at the time.
Yeah. So there you have a classic case of at your administrative level, sharing an account. It's not unreasonable to believe that this was an account that at somewhere in SolarWinds people were, onboarded and saying, hey, when you push updates, here's the creds that you use. Mm-hmm. And it really, really beats on the drum of use federated access, use user accounts, use multi-factor authentication, figure out how to hook pretty much everything out there can hook into some kind of federated user access, whether it's Windows Active Directory or Red Hat IDM or, using SAML or, whatever. It can be done. It's a headache. I know this firsthand. But it can be done, and that would have gone a long way to prevent this from happening.
Can you kind of explain real quick what a federated account is?
Basically, you just have a when I use this in this case, I'm talking like federated user storage. And that would be where you have like one database that has all of your truth user accounts in it, like who exists in your infrastructure. And then other authentication systems can connect back to that to pull that data forward. So when you're onboarding or offboarding personnel or users or whatever, you do that in one location, and then right. That federates out to the other authentication mechanisms you have in an organization.
Gotcha. That makes sense. So as a red teamer, if you're looking, you're doing reconnaissance on a company, and you see on a GitHub site the password for the update server for the company is SolarWinds123. How excited do you get?
Oh, very much so, especially if I pulled it out of, the current, the most recent push to GitHub. It's not an uncommon technique for a red team to find a publicly facing GitHub or GitLab or whatever for a client. And we're not only looking to see what's on there, but we're looking to see what was in the previous pushes as well. Because the thing about Git is it's version control. It has all the previous versions there to review. And it's getting less common, but it's not unheard of for you to look maybe two or three versions in the past to see that they accidentally pushed a version up with credentials in it. And they go, oh, crap, I got to fix that. So they delete it out of the file and then recommit it and repush it back up again. But that old commit is still there.
Mm-hmm. So talk a little bit about why the update server was so valuable. I mean, in other words, like, so there's going to be people that are listening that are quite not as tech savvy as you guys, but from an attacker perspective, so you're into the update server. You've essentially now have the keys to everybody's kingdom in the sense that you can send them whatever you want, correct?
Right. It goes back to my earlier point, which is when you have a distributed managed solution, if you can penetrate the core of that all of the entities outside of that are reaching out to, they poisoned a single DLL file in the update on SolarWinds. And then these 300,000 some odd subscribing customers who were diligent in their updates pulled down that update and got the file. And the one aspect I haven't seen made clear is that file was not only malicious and Trojanized, but it was actually signed by the SolarWinds private key. So somehow it sounds like they maybe gained access to SolarWinds PKI infrastructure as well and were able to sign that. But um, Does that answer your question though? Like, they
So, and it, so the other, another big aspect of this, once they, so here's a question I have, because I'm not obviously a red teamer penetration tester, but so they get access to the update server. They're able to put their own tools on this server, assuming that the customers are going to download that as part of their update. How do they then use that, those, that, you know, Trojanized files to then pivot off of whatever management server it's going on to into the rest of the system to get access to the email account? How does that, what's the kind of workaround for making that work?
Well, in this case, what was happening was the DLL would, it would sit there for a few weeks, not do anything, be very quiet. And then when it woke up, it started making connections outbound from the SolarWinds Orion appliance it was on to the attacker-owned command and control structure. And they did this in a way that those callouts looked exactly like the normal callouts Orion was making to see if it had updates. So to a blue team or to a SOC watching the network traffic, the way the traffic looked, it looked like it was valid, like other traffic they had going on. What was different about it was the address it was going to, and that, and some would say should have been a tip off, but you know it wasn't, and that's just how it is. But in this case, it was sending out to a, I believe they were actually hosted in AWS, but there were these command and control servers, and the host name they were reaching out to, the URI, the subdomain they were reaching out to, had this like weird blob of nonsense at the beginning of it. So it was like this big blob dot something dot something dot com, right? And the server that received that was able to decode that blob, that string, and get facts about the SolarWinds device that it just called back, its host name, a username, the network interface names, some other stuff as well. And then that server on the C2 side would respond back to the Trojanized SolarWinds and give it an IP address and say, here's your job server. Here's where you get your jobs from. In this case, jobs could be anything from create a local user account or, you know, tell you what directory, what files are in directory that you're in, or, you know, tell me what network connections are active. Anything you could type into a Windows command line interface at that point, that kind of job could be passed down from the C2. So it's just like being, it's just like sitting in front of that computer with a screen keyboard and a, you know, a PowerShell or a Windows command line and just typing commands in at that point.
Okay, so then they got in that way, then they pivoted to, it looked like at least as far as been, as I'm sure there's more to it that we will find over the next couple of weeks, but currently the big news is the Department of Commerce email system was compromised. So how does one pivot from that server into the, how do you get to the email server from that? And you, and I'll be honest with you, you may have explained it already, I'm just not getting it, but so that's why I'm asking that question.
Yeah, so once that DLL is referenced by the Orion service binary and it's been loaded and now we're calling out and doing tasking, if you follow the documentation of SolarWinds, that needed to run the context of the NT30 system. So you have root essentially on that Windows workstation. From that point, I can interact with any other process on the target. Well, who interacts with SolarWinds products? It's going to be administrators in your environment. So RDP sessions are going to be up, PowerShell sessions are going to be up. At that point, I can start injecting into those processes or pulling out memory from the from those processes and start trying to harvest things like LSAS credentials for those privileged admins. At that point, running things like a pass the hash attack in a Windows aggregator environment, that's what's going to facilitate the lateral movement. And if it's a domain admin that was able to harvest creds off the box from, pivot to the DC, dump all of the credentials, and at that point, it's fairly trivial to go wherever else you need to go.
I got you. So when you say credentials, you're talking usernames and passwords? Get them both?
Right.
And an interesting behavior that this particular Trojan ran was when it woke up after its like 2-week dormant period, it would gather some facts about the box that it was running on. And one of those facts it looked for is is this machine joined to a Windows domain? And it sounds like if the answer was no, it just kind of killed itself and went away, because they were only interested in domain joined systems, because when they had their initial access, they had local admin on the box. But then they were able to elevate that to domain level administration. And then when they look across the network and they see, well, there's the Exchange server, and to answer your question specifically, they would find the Exchange server, and they could use those credentials they harvested to be able to get admin access on that Exchange server and, you know, perform whatever nefarious actions they wanted to run.
I got you. So that makes sense. So and another interesting thing that I read this week was they were able to bypass the multi-factor authentication system that had been set up for the organizations they got access to. Talk a little bit about, I mean, the news report I saw kind of talked about it, but didn't go into great detail. And you may not have the specs behind how they did it, but what it, you know, based on your best guess estimation, how did they bypass that multi-factor authentication? You talk to most security experts, they're going to say, hey, if you have multi-factor authentication, a good strong password, you're reducing your risk for the most part as best you can. Clearly, this was not the case here in the sense that they were able to bypass that multi-factor tool. How did they pull that off?
Sure. So the core goal of multi-factor authentication is to prevent an unauthorized user to get access to something, mm-hmm. right? So in this case, the Duo MFA was set up to run with their Exchange, so that when someone logged into their email, they had to use both factors to get into their mailbox. Multi-factor, however, unfortunately, it is typically not set up at the domain user level. So when the same users are sitting down at their computers and logging in, they were not using multi-factor authentication. But when they opened up OWA, they were using it. So in this case, with the SolarWinds breach, that initial access we talked about a minute ago, where they have the local admin on the SolarWinds box and they get domain level admin, then they move over to Exchange and have local admin there, that's all outside of the scope of the multi-factor authentication. So at this point, I'm kind of taking an educated or experienced guess on this. The way you connect the DuoSec service to your Outlook server, they give you a couple of secret facts you have to use when you install the DuoSec software, and you have to put these values into it in order to have it synchronized back to your Duo account and say that it's authorized. And one of these keys, when the attackers were able to use the access granted by their C2 architecture into SolarWinds, they were local admins on that Exchange box, meaning they could do anything they want, period, the end. They had no restrictions of access. And it sounds like they were able to either grab a forensic image of the running Outlook process, or maybe some kind of config file. Somehow they were able to scrape that secret fact out of the running OWA, and they're able to use that to craft their own session tokens, which are granted to the user after they've successfully authenticated. That's what keeps you from having to do it over and over and over again. You authenticate one time at the beginning of the morning, and then you can go back to your OWA all day long without redoing it every time, because you've been granted this session token inside your OWA. So the attackers were then able to make their own session token because they had the secrets to how that was created. And then they tried to authenticate into a user's mailbox, and they gave their own session token saying, I've already authenticated today. You don't have to check me again. You know, it's the equivalent of having the Jedi mind trick of, you know, you're 16 and you walk up to a bar and about to present to see your ID, and you wave your hand and go, you've already seen my ID. And
right, yeah.
Essentially what happened here.
So based on your experience, is this just a one-off breach in the sense that they just got lucky and that they were able to identify a third-party provider for all of these organizations that they wanted to get into anyway? They were able to, you know, find an easy password? Or is this something that when you look at it, you're more like, yeah, not surprised. This is how they do it. Or is this more like, well, that's pretty impressive on the amount of effort it took to get in?
This was a very impressive one, because we've seen some TTPs, some tactics, techniques, and procedures in this that we haven't seen before. The way that the jobs were handed off from the C2 servers down to the infected SolarWinds If you were looking at that traffic coming in with a packet analyzer, you would just see just normal XML data, but striped across that data were the commands for the beacon listening to perform actions. It was very, very clever how they did that. But as a red teamer, as an attacker, one of your first things you do when you are sitting there looking at your screen, you see that something activate that says you now have access into a machine because your attack called back, right? Mm-hmm. The very first thing you're doing is performing actions to solidify that stance. And that's something such as creating a secondary connection into that box that is completely separate and independent from your initial access. So if your initial one fails, then you can roll over to your backup. A very common example of this is if you get a phishing email with a infected Word document and you open it, that attacker gets that callback. But the thing is, as soon as you close that Word document, they're going to lose their access because it's that process running that is their connection back. So they are scrambling to establish a secondary connection so that when you close that Word document, they don't lose their access. And that's what's happening here already. What's already been discovered by the folks, I think it was at FireEye, but maybe somewhere else, is they've already discovered the kill switch for this infection. They've already figured out how to make it go away. There's a registry key you can set to the value of 3 that makes the process stop running. And then there's you can recognize the HTTP requests that are going out, intercept those, and reply with a certain IP address and cause it to think it's been compromised. So we know how to kill the SolarWinds thing. But these infections that have been happening since March of this year, those attackers have established secondary means of access in many cases. So even though you can stop the initial thing, you still got to figure out where did they go after that? What machines did they pivot to create that independent connection? This is far from over because they've had so much time to solidify their footholds inside these networks.
Do we know how they came about it? Was FireEye the first one to identify this was a problem? Or has that even come out?
Yeah, so it was FireEye. It was so FireEye a week ago announced that they had a breach themselves, mm-hmm. And it was a breach that resulted in the compromise of some of their red team assessment tools. And at first, this was a really big news story, and we're all kind of paying attention to it. But as they did their incident response and as they ran forensics on their own network to see how this happened, then they discovered the problem was that they were using SolarWinds and that was in there. And, once they start talking around the community and people start pulling it apart, they realize, well, this is connected to that password back in 2019. And, the dominoes, the Legos started clicking together and everything started coming together. And I know yesterday when you came to us and asked us to do this, you asked us to do this with you yesterday, and I said there's still new stuff coming out. Let's close down first and see what's going on. But even today, stuff is coming out today that this onion has many layers to it.
And you mentioned something yesterday to me about the whole they were able to whitelist their malware.
Oh yeah, this one about the install instructions.
No.
Okay. So when you someone went to the SolarWinds page and found their documentation on how to install SolarWinds, the Orion, and one of the first steps was after you get it installed, you go into your endpoint protection, your antivirus, whatever you're using to protect yourself, and you explicitly instruct it to not scan the SolarWinds directory. And this is not unheard of. This is where a company has a product that for pen testers, it's very common. Our tools are categorized as malicious. So if you run antivirus on your pen testing system, it's just going to melt down. I personally caused all kinds of alarms at the bank I worked at one time because I decided to install some pen test tools locally on my machine. And yeah, anyway, they caused this whitelist of their directory. And then once this attack happened, a lot of the AV vendors out there, they got the signatures and they said, hey, update your McAfee's and your whatever, and it can now detect that Trojanized file. Problem was, if someone followed the instructions, it couldn't because the McAfee or whatever wouldn't even scan that directory. And this was compounded even worse by the fact that about midday on Monday, SolarWinds said, hey, we pushed out an update, grab the update, you know, everything. And then someone grabbed the update and pulled it apart, and the infected file was still there. So people would grab the update, they would install it, they would do their A/B scans and go, oh, look, it's clean, so I'm good to go. But no, because you didn't scan the directory and the file was still there.
Well, this will probably make you guys feel better. It's coming from the government before. I just got an email that there was a joint statement by the FBI, DHS, and ODNI saying that over the course of the past several days, the FBI, CISA, and ODNI have become aware of significant and ongoing cybersecurity campaign. And then so pursuant to PDD 41, the FBI, CISA, and ODNI have formed a cyber unified coordination group to coordinate a whole of government response to this significant cyber incident. Does that fill you with warm and fuzzy feelings of greatness that this is all going to be resolved quickly?
I mean, it all comes down to, is your IT staff empowered to analyze the environment, make tough calls, and come to you with bad news without fearing for their job? This whole getting this thing fixed and eradicated is going to take the C-level folks out there that, you know, are at the wheel of steering their ship, trusting their engineers and trusting their IT analysts and their cyber analysts to say, you know, maybe for the time being, we need to take that box offline that makes it very convenient to do our job. You know, we have to increase hours and we need to increase overhead until we have a sure fix for this that we're confident in. Like I said, it's far from over. The government intervention is great when it comes to pointing some of those U.S. nation state resources to figure out, you know, what the truth behind everything is. But again, it doesn't matter what they find out or what they disclose if the managers and the bosses and the chiefs out there aren't empowering their people to honestly analyze their situation and take action.
Right, because how many other companies are saying, hey, you know what, we didn't have SolarWinds, we're good, we don't have to worry about anything, we don't have to look at any of our other systems, they're all pristine. But how many other companies are using the same kind of updating service where there's a single, you know, management server that pushes out updates that for the diligent, they're pulling those updates as they need to. If I'm the nation state that conducted this intrusion, I'm saying this worked fantastic, let's go find other companies doing the same thing.
Yeah, and there's a breach of trust, because when we buy something that is a convenience tool like SolarWinds, and we're giving it this carte blanche access into our entire infrastructure, we're putting some level of trust in SolarWinds to not allow this kind of thing to happen. And I don't know where this is going to go as far as them as a company or whatever, but it seriously is, this should be something that causes decision makers to take a step back and ask what other questions could we be asking before we take on this kind of tool to make sure it's not introducing vulnerability or risk that we just can't accept.
Oh, great point. You got to think also that, you know, whatever architecture SolarWinds created to do this, they probably share that information with partners and other companies they work with that are doing the exact same thing. So with
there's often that whole thing of, you know, this is our secret sauce.
True. Yep. Mm-hmm. But you have a guy who worked at SolarWinds for 5 years, gets paid a better job at Company X, and says, hey, this is what we did here. And I'm not going to give you any corporate secrets of how we did it, but this was the mechanism, and it's, someone figured it out one way, someone will figure it out another way.
Yeah, that's the big cross-pollination effect, right? You can say, hey, I was an engineer here, and I've got an NDA where I can't tell you exactly how you're doing it, but I can sit down in like a week and write it from scratch.
Right. Well, fellas, I appreciate the time. Any final thoughts on this? What do you think? What's the next 2 weeks going to look like?
I honestly, it's going to still continue to be rather eventful. I believe that other publicly traded companies of pretty high significance are going to have to disclose some more vulnerabilities or impacts from this initial web or crow foot from SolarWinds. it's going to be far from over like TC had mentioned. What's going to be the challenge for responders and analysts is 6 months to a year down the road to try to correlate the access and compromise of networks back to potentially this initial set of compromise and lateral movement, maybe from partner managed service providers, right? So it's a challenging problem to try to route back to where the problem initially lied. So I don't envy the position at all.
Yeah, and speaking directly to the audience, if you're listening to this and you have a blue team, you have a SOC, you have people in your organization that it's their job to be watching for stuff like this, buy them some donuts or something. Like, do something nice for them.
Right, exactly.
But also empower them. If you're in a position to empower them to really just look at everything going on, empower them to find weird stuff, to find suspicious things. And that's going to be the blue team, your SOC, is where the real fight is happening. That is real cybersecurity is in that room with those people staring at those screens.
That's a great point. You know who's happiest this week is Hewlett-Packard, because their zero-day vulnerability for their server management system that took everything offline yesterday is getting no news coverage. So that's the happiest company in the world.
I haven't heard of it, so good point.
Yep, right, exactly. So, well, fellas, I appreciate your time. Thanks for coming on, and I guess we'll talk about Hewlett-Packard another time when they become a big problem.
I'm Googling it right now.
All right, thanks.
All right, thanks again.
Thanks. See ya.
So now that we got the technical piece covered, let's talk about the CI piece for a little bit. Who did this? If you read the news, Russia is getting the main targeting, and chances are they were the actors that did it. Apparently, some of their tools, tactics, and procedures were affiliated with a known intrusion group called Cozy Bear or Advanced Persistent Threat 29, if you want to get that specific. So that's, you know, I'm not saying that's incorrect or unlikely, but most probable. But I would also say don't be afraid to look at China as well, who may have assisted, may have piggybacked in on the intrusions, because chances are the Russian intelligence services and the Chinese intelligence services work together. And so if the Russians had been in these systems for, you know, upwards to 9 months, chances are they probably shared some of that intelligence with China, or even better, China was into the Russian systems, saw these type of intrusions, and then piggybacked on them that way. So I would say do not restrict this specifically to Russia. It could be both. And as, you know, Gary Gardner and I talked about last week with China, Russia, Russia, China, you know, obviously both have similar interests. Based on the news reports of the companies whose email or the entities whose emails were compromised, Department of Commerce, Department of Homeland Security, certainly makes sense Russia would be the primary target there, simply because it fits their geopolitical needs. But it does for China as well. I work cases with the FBI where China was into the email systems of government systems that we were watching them do. So, or government entities. So this would not be uncommon for China to do either. And I want to reiterate one point TC made there at the end regarding the C-suite. This is the responsibility of the executives that run a company. If you want to protect your service, your systems, your network infrastructure, I guess I should say, you need to empower the people that are there to protect it and give them the resources they need to do that. Part of that includes education. Make everybody understand what the threats are, what those vulnerabilities are, so you can reduce risk. This was likely a phishing campaign, as TC and Todd mentioned earlier. That's always the way in. There was no brute force attack here. If the SolarWinds update server password was still SolarWinds123, that is horrible human cause for that particular intrusion to occur, if that password was as simple as it means. So it's, again, it's hard to say. We'll probably not know for months exactly what this was or how it exactly occurred, but we will get news and bits and pieces here and there that give us some pretty good insight into the extent of it. So this is not the last you'll hear of SolarWinds, but I wanted to do this quick little pop-up podcast to kind of talk about that because it's in the news, hopefully make you understand it a little better as the news continues to come through it. I want to thank you for listening. Thank those who have downloaded and listened. The Cyber Guy podcast is available on all of your favorite streaming services. Feel free to tell a friend. Pass the information along so you can share this information with other folks so they're aware of what's going on. If you have any questions for me, feel free to email me at darren@thecyberguy.com. Cyber is spelled C-Y-B-U-R. If you have questions or topics you'd like for future podcasts, you can email me and let me know there as well. Again, I appreciate you taking the time to listen. Thank you to TC and Todd for participating on short notice. As you go through your week, make sure you understand the threats that are targeting you. Take a look at the vulnerabilities those threats are targeting, reduce your risk overall, and proceed wisely. Thanks again for listening. Have a good week.